everyone, and welcome back to the Run Strong podcast. Finally, again, after another little break. This is episode 9, I think, and we've got a guest on this episode, Rupert Bonington. I was lucky enough to be up in Keswick in the Lake District before Christmas for a race, and Rupert invited me round to his home, had a cup of tea and a bit of food, and just a good chat, really, about his background and how Mountain Fuel started, how he got involved. He's recently had a long battle with long-term injury and as a fell runner living in the Lake District, how he's dealt with that. We go through some basic tips on fueling your training and your racing and how to get started really in the local fell running scene. And we also just cover his future plans and products within Mountain Fuel. So I hope you enjoy our chat together. I'll put all kind of Rupert's links to his to the website and also to the Facebook page as well, so you can check more out there. But here is Rupert Bonington and Mountain Fuel.
It's just easier, isn't it?
Right, so I'm at Rupert's house, Mountain Fuel headquarters.
Mountain Fuel Mansion.
Mountain Fuel Mansion, in Keswick, just down the road from Tailwind Towers, apparently. But I'm catching up with Rupert, and we're going to talk a bit about nutrition, hopefully, about Mountain Fuel, the brand, and hopefully a bit about Rupert's background as well I want to dig into. So welcome to Rupert. Thanks for the cup of tea, first off, and the honey parsnips I've got. He's laid on some honey parsnips. Is that a new gel coming out?
That it could be a new
flavor. It's a taste test. But yeah, we've got a couple of days to Christmas. January, everyone will be training, so we're going to nail down some nutrition basics, I think, hopefully.
Can this go out after Christmas?
Yeah, go on.
Because then it's been a rocky road the last kind of 14 months. So kind of basically 14 months ago, I had hip surgery on my right hand side, and that involved just some kind of bone spurs being shaved off, and then also my labrum, my hip socket needed to be shaved, and labrum needed to be kind of pegged back on. But unfortunately, I also needed my left hip, had similar issues. So I kind of had seven or eight months in between those two operations. I basically haven't been able to run for about 12 months. But recently I've actually been getting out. I've managed a few kind of like 2.5-3-ish mile runs.
Pain-free?
Not pain-free.
Yeah.
It's like I haven't got suspension in my hips.
No one's pain-free after 30, though, are they?
No. And I'm trying to be sensible. Like, I'm not known for my running sensibility, you know, which is probably why I ended up with the issues in the first place. But this time, I'm trying to be sensible, I suppose, apart from the 10K road race I'm going to do on Sunday.
Yeah. So it's 10K on Sunday on the road. Yeah.
Yeah, after about 30 miles of training.
Yeah, you're well rested though, aren't you?
Hey, this is a taper. I've been on a 14-month taper, so I'm fresh. I'm fresh for a PB.
And before you had the ops and things, how long did you struggle with the injury? Did you know what?
The problem is I've had for a number of years, I've had kind of back issues. So I had an operation on my back maybe about 15 years ago. And so ever since then, I have had back issues. When I've ran, you know, I've had those kind of stabbing pains in your back. You can't put your shoes on in the morning, all those kind of things. So whenever I have had issues, I've always thought it was a back issue. Mm. But then a couple of years before I had the operations, I basically found that when I was kind of, because I was live in the Lake District, surrounded by fells, do a lot of climbing, and I found that when I was ascending, so running up hills, my hip flexors were just packing in on me. Mm. So I had loads of energy, felt good, but I just literally just couldn't keep going up the hills.
And that's not normal for the climbing and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, so So that was an issue. And then it did become like every time I was running, it was like somebody was just stabbing me in my kind of groin and in my hips. And again, whether that's being a fell runner, whether that's just being a stubborn northerner, whether that's just being a runner, you kind of think, well, you know, I'll just crack on.
Yeah.
I'll just, you know, I'm getting old. I'm, you know, nearly 50. You know, it's just part of running. But it got to the point where it was just, I was finishing races and literally I couldn't take my trainers off because I couldn't literally bend down because like somebody was stabbing me in the side and it was just spasms. And so I thought, I need to get something done. So that's when I started that process of going to see a proper physio and mm-hmm. getting it assessed and scanned. And lo and behold, there was two big lumps. And I think because I didn't get it sorted soon enough, I've also got cysts in my loading part of my hips.
Yeah.
So I've essentially got arthritis in there now.
Yeah.
So they're not in a great place.
Yeah, but if you're getting running again.
Yeah, well, this is it.
I remember speaking to you a long time ago about it, and it wasn't about the racing. It was like, I just want to go and have an easy run on the fell.
I just love to run.
Yeah.
I feel lucky and blessed in where I live. I live in the heart of what I think is the most stunning part of the world. Keswick has got hills all around that you can just literally run to. I could go and run different run every single day, you know, for whatever distance, road, trail, fell. And I just enjoy it. I enjoy going out, running, taking photos of my runs, little videos of my runs. I love running with people, just chatting. I'm probably really annoying to run with because I chat a lot. And especially if I'm running with faster folk, because the best way to slow them down is to keep talking.
Yeah, yeah. So I asked some of my RunStrong members if they wanted to ask you any questions before I came up.
Yeah.
And Peter Kolatowicz, I know Peter, sorry for butchering your name, mate, but he wants to know, how did you get started in the supplement business, which is probably a good place to start.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
Rewinding a bit.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, Peter. So basically,
would you call it a supplement business?
I would. Well, it's kind of, well, it is and it isn't. I suppose if I start where I started from,
yeah,
I have grown up in a family environment that I think has always had to kind of take nutrition relatively seriously because, you know, my dad was a good climber.
Remember,
good,
I'm sat in your kitchen good. Now, mate. There's an open bottle of red there.
That's my wife.
Oh, okay, yeah.
No, but she had that for breakfast.
There's empty boxes of mince pies over there.
No, there's one there. That's for you.
Yeah, go on.
And I think because of the kind of expeditions and the kind of things that he did.
So for anyone who doesn't know, fill people in quickly.
Well, Chris Bonington. So he's a mountain. A lot of folk won't even know. You know, he's 85 now.
Yeah.
You know, his day was a long time ago. But, you know, he was a good mountaineer. He was a good climber. And, you know, along with a group of other lads, they did a lot of first ascents, brought new ground, did, you know, serious high-end kind of stuff. And my mum was basically, she did a lot of the nutrition for the expeditions, you know, the very kind of quite healthy diet. She was a vegetarian. My dad's not a vegetarian, but a lot of the food was kind of vegetarian based.
Yeah.
So I've kind of grown up with an understanding of food. I've always been very sporty, just love anything. Honestly, I could join in any sport, just love it.
Did you see food as fuel almost then?
Well, it's a funny one because obviously when I was younger,
you just piling stuff in.
And literally anything. You know, I didn't really fully appreciate. I don't think I really appreciated it until I came back because I left home at like literally 16, went down to London, spent about 4 or 5 years in London. I'm not a city boy, you know, I'm a country boy. Ended up coming back up here, lived at home for a while. And it was only then really that I started appreciating food because I was like going out and I was running and I kind of started making that connection between actually you can't I can't get away with eating crap if I want to, you know, enjoy a decent run out on the fells and things. Yeah. So, but in between that, I kind of had a ski business, a ski travel agents and stuff. And then when I sold my shares in that business, I then had an opportunity to kind of like think, well, what is it I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I live in the lakes. I absolutely love where I live. I'd love it to be involved with something that enabled me to get out and enjoy what I enjoy doing. My brother owns a gym in Australia, and he was up for Christmas from Australia, and he was going to see this lad down in Wales, who one of his mates in Australia, who's from England, put him in touch with about taking this product over to Australia.
Yeah.
And he kind of mentioned to me, and he said, I've gone out to see this lad, you know, he's got this sports nutrition business. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. And he came back and he said, look, I really think you should talk to this guy. You know, he's got these great products, but I think he needs somebody to kind of team up with him to help take to another level.
Yeah.
And in a different direction. Because he's got, you know, he's a nutritionist, got all the ideas, he's ex-army, but it didn't necessarily, it's very difficult when you're on your own to then kind of, you can't have all the skills.
Yeah.
Marketing, business.
Can't do everything.
So I basically went and had a meeting with him, had a crack with him, and we got on well, and we kind of just, it took about 14 months before I kind of really kind of committed and things, used the product load, got other for you, and yeah, I just thought, bloody hell, this is a really good base product.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is something I'd really enjoy doing, and it's just kind of grown from there, because we've not forced the business. We've not, to me, this was a business that I wanted to kind of just let grow, let it do the talking, let it do the work. And we would just enjoy the journey along the way. So we've not done mass distribution. We've not approached it in a way that other people approach it. I would say we're probably not very businesslike, you know, in our approach, even to the point like with the guys that who kind of run with us, like, so our kind of so-called kind of team Mountain Fuel, you know, there's no agreements, there's no contracts, there's no, you've got to do X, Y, or Z. Like, I don't even, to me, it's like, if they want to use other people's products, they can't, you know, it's just, look, if you
think that's come because you're in the sport as well, so you understand that maybe you can't really force someone to be exclusively just using that, maybe.
Absolutely.
And it comes down to choice.
Totally.
A lot of it.
Yeah, I think with brands, I think we can get very precious over our brand. And I think it's really difficult, isn't it? Because obviously with a clothing brand or a shoe brand, they just want their guys seen in their shoes. But you might have the greatest fell shoe in the world. But if you don't have a great road shoe, then what does that athlete do?
Yeah,
you know, is he going to get told off for wearing the competitors who they've got? So I personally, I believe our system actually does a great all-round job, but it's only now that we've been able to add all these different products. When we first started out and we had a certain set of products, we didn't have a complete system. We didn't have the options that you can kind of say, well, look, you can use this at that point. So, you know, how can I say to you, right, Gary, you know, you're gonna, you know, join Team Mountain Fuel or whatever, right, you've got to use our power, right, you can't use that or that.
Mm.
But that's something that you've always used, and it's actually worked really well for you and actually helped you finish your race and enjoy it. To me, it's about you.
And also, I don't know of anyone that would solely use one kind of product or system for everything either.
No, exactly, and especially on long stuff.
Yeah. And that's sometimes it's not even out of choice, you're just grabbing stuff. And
you might end up, you might be at a race,
yeah,
and actually you might have used all the stuff on you, you've got to use it, or it might just be you've ran out, or it might, you know, or it might just simply be that you find that a combination of different certain things works well for you.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And I think if you put too much on one product as well, it's like, well, what happens when, especially, it's different, depends who you're talking to, but if you're talking some of the people are in 8-10 hour plus races,
yeah,
and they're relying on one product, you just get kind of fatigued.
Well, you can get flavour fatigue, yeah, and things like that. So I think you've got to be, and I think that's what we've tried to do over time with the product. We don't have tons and tons of different variations, but we've tried to introduce, whenever we introduce like a new flavour or a product, it's got to have a real reason. We're not just trying to just churn out a load of random party flavour. You know, you get people and they've got billions of different flavours and this, that and the other. And I think for us, it's got to have a functional reason within the system. So, you know, we've got the raw energy, so that helps you not get flavour fatigue. We've got the sports jellies, again, because they're nothing like a gel. They're totally different, work fundamentally different. Our bars, again, I'd argue that they're very different to the other kind of bars you get. But it's taken us years to develop them, years to put them out there. And, I think for us, it's about producing functional products that will work hand in hand with other things.
Yeah.
And help. To me, it's all about people enjoying their experience. I love running. I'm passionate about running and enjoying it. So if I can help people enjoy their activity, whether it be running, cycling, swimming, hiking, whatever, if we can help them enjoy that experience more, job done.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the kind of, like you say, people do kind of become a bit protective over what they use and things like that. But like you say, the basics aren't complicated, really.
No.
So that's why when you see some, like if there's a brand with 100 different ways of working things, it's like, well, hang on a minute. People are confused to the point of they just try everything and then nothing works, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the simple stuff.
Yeah.
That you miss the simple stuff, the core things that you actually need.
Yeah. I think for us, like we try to put out, like I've put together like a load of different guides, because we've got like, we can give people a base idea of, look, this can work in a general way for you. It might work perfectly for you, but actually this is a good guide, but we can explain in there that everybody's very different. And you might tweak it. You might tweak it with different products. You might tweak it with different amounts. You might tweak it with different timings, because this kind of thing of, as well, you get people that say, like, for example, I might say, I'm going to do a marathon. Right, you've got to have a gel every X minutes. That might not necessarily match the reality of the course or the temperatures on the day or the humidity or anything like that. You've got to kind of understand a little bit about what you're using and how you use it in training, and then how it then works for you on the day, because you can't be really super prescriptive with things.
Yeah. I mean, most people will have some kind of, I know we've gone on a bit of tangent there, but you wanted this covered. How long did it take for you to achieve success as a business? I thought that might be a tough question for you.
It's about producing, kind of us being able to produce the products that have helped people get their own personal success. Mm. So it's kind of getting that feel good, kind of enjoying what they're doing. So whether that be somebody emailing me or phoning me up, myself or Darren, and basically saying, right, this is what I'd like to do. Have you got any advice? And it doesn't matter what level they are, whether they're literally starting out on their journey or some of our world champion athletes, we get the same level of pleasure giving them advice. And so to me, I suppose the success comes just from that kind of feedback, because, you know, we're never going to be.
People can just ask you as well. Like if someone asks me something, and I quite often I'll just say, well, ask, send them a message.
That's so important.
And they'll talk you through it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because whether it's I could talk them through it or not, usually I just say, well, just speak to them.
Yeah.
Because then I know that at least, because I'd rather than being told what to do, kind of thing, we'll just take this XXX, just have a conversation kind of thing. And then you might know a bit more. Whether you use it or not, I don't really care.
Absolutely.
And it's quite difficult with maybe bigger companies as well. to get that conversation or to get that information, because it's, if you speak to, because otherwise, if the bigger the company is, it just has to be quite black and white.
I think the problem is with a lot of the, with a lot of companies out there, you've either got it started by somebody who thinks, right, I really like the idea of having a nutrition business or whatever, and they see some products and they'll go to somebody who makes sports nutrition products and they'll say, I either want to copy that or I want a version of that, but in it, I want to have the latest, whatever the latest superfood is or whatever.
Yeah.
And they don't, and it's kind of because that's either the latest fashion or trend or because the latest science says that's the amazing thing to do or whatever. And they don't really necessarily fully understand what that product is really going to do in the real world. And I think what we've done is we've kind of taken our time to get to our extra products because, you know, we wanted to really, there's a massive difference between the reality of science and what science says something will do, between what a dietitian will say it'll do, between what a sports nutritionist say it'll do, and then the reality of what that product will do in the real world with real people in different environments, in different race types, in different bodies. And I think that is a massive difference that we, people can contact us, and I think that we have that a more...
From kind of testing an idea to bringing out...
Well, the sports jellies, for example, they were over 2 years of various, well, from the kind of the principle of the idea through to lots of different testing. Because we, like, whenever we test stuff, we almost kind of want it tested in every continent, in every type of temperature. So it's kind of like, it's who's racing where. So we've got somebody who's maybe going to somewhere that's like insanely hot. We've got somebody who might be racing later in the year in somewhere that's insanely humid. We've got somebody who might be going to do some alpine climbing, you know, 5,000-6,000 meters or whatever, and certain coldness or whatever. Or it might just be we've got guys who are just doing a local ultra, but we like to test everything in lots of different environments. And try to use similar people for that kind of testing of that particular product. Because if you have too many people doing it, then you get different feedback. But it is a long process, you know, to get it absolutely right. And things like the sports jelly, they kind of sound as if it's such a simple thing.
Yeah.
And like people refer to them as they're like a hydrogel type jelly before there's another brand out there that brought out the world's first hydrogel, kind of beaten to it, but we didn't really say much. But you know,
in those jellies, is it that's the main difference?
No,
yeah,
not it. So you've got your kind of multi-source energy from there, but we also create like a hydrogel using a special type of pectin and a process to create that. And basically what happens is that the jelly basically encapsulates the carbohydrates, so your energy, and also the minerals, because we've also got minerals in there, so your salts, the electrolytes. And it basically means that when it goes into your stomach, so your traditional gel is like a syrup. So when you take it on board, you get this fast energy hit because it literally flies through your stomach into your intestine. And then what happens is, once it gets into your intestine, it suddenly needs either water and blood flow from your working muscles and your body, your system, to make them work. But that puts a big strain on your system. But it's like this sudden rush. And that's why people kind of have this kind of roller coaster with traditional gels. The way that the jellies work is that because they're encapsulated, they pass through your stomach slower. So that when they actually get into your intestines, there's not as big a hit of sugar, essentially.
Yeah.
And because it's a encapsulated, it draws through the intestinal wall because of the hydrogel. Because it's encapsulated, you've got your water in there, your mineral and your carbohydrate. It doesn't have that same requirement to get through your intestinal wall. So it's a lot easier on the stomach. It's a more sustained release. they're more refreshing because you don't feel like you need loads of water. You know, if you read the back of a gel packet, even the ones that say they don't need loads of water, they might not need loads of water, but they're still fundamentally a watered-down syrup.
Mm.
So it's still a sudden big hit of sugar on your system.
So what you're saying is there's just less chance of following through?
less to none. You know, we've got guys who've got Crohn's.
Yeah.
And that's, see, so again, for us, it's like a tester, isn't it? So we try to design things so that our jellies, guys with Crohn's and IBS, IBD, whatever, can use them.
Mm.
Guys with the really bad stomach issues can use them, and the same with the bars. You know, because
the way I look at it as well, if someone, people's guts obviously react differently, yeah?
Yeah,
and you can train your gut the same as a lot of other stuff,
yeah,
you can. So people either are kind of maybe new to the sport or whatever, or they've just neglected that side of things,
yeah,
can come under some issues. But then someone that is just, some people are just built differently and can, absolutely, just throw anything down.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time that's when like opinions kind of, it's like, where are these opinions coming from? Can this person just take on anything?
Yeah.
And then it's just personal preference.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that into it as well.
Yeah. I
that's why I think the asking the questions part is really important.
It's really important. Absolutely. Yeah. And the thing is, I think as well, look, anybody can have anything.
Mm.
But not everything is equal.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the end of the day, you can do a marathon on jelly babies.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Of course you can. You could do a marathon on pot pies. You could do a marathon having nothing.
Mm.
But if you want to get a better experience, then actually having something that maybe gives you a more sustained energy release, that's replenishing your muscles, that means that you feel better the following day, that you're not as stiff, you recover quicker, you're able to run again sooner. That's my kind of running.
Mm.
Do you mean that's what I enjoy? I enjoy running and getting out as much as possible. I don't enjoy not being able to walk down the stairs. I don't enjoy getting to the end of a race feeling like my legs are going to fall off because they're just in absolute bits because they've been cramping up in their end. That's not fun. You know, I want to kind of train in a way and take on food, nutrition, whatever it be, in a way that gives me the best chance to enjoy the whole process.
Yeah. That came from, how did you get started? I think.
No, well, everybody's going to have to forgive us. Call me Mr. Tangent. I'll be all over the place.
I don't know the answer to this, but is it, obviously, I see some of the end products or whatever, and yeah, everyone's seen the end products. Yeah. Is there any that have been in the bin and other just?
No, there's loads in the pipeline. There's things that we've tried that hasn't worked. There's things that we're trying that we keep trying.
What's the kind of number one thing that people ask you for that you don't already do?
We've got a lot of people asking us to produce like a kind of, you know how you, well you can go to, like, for the ultra style stuff, for example, you know, your kind of baby food style pouches with, because in the early days, like, that's what we used to tell everybody to do. So before people switched on to the fact that you could go to Aldi and you could get, you know, your real food in a baby food pouch for 50p or a pound, an adult version of those, and there are alternatives out there. There are, you know, there are products out there that do that and try to do that.
Surely if you get it just from the baby food, that's a lot of baby food pouches.
Well, these are the issues.
Because I've looked.
Yeah, these are the issues. People use those. The problem is they're not calorific.
Yeah.
You've got to have a lot of them.
Mm.
So it's kind of like, for me, it's that kind of weight to what you're getting. There's other alternatives that are better out there. But this is what people are buying. These people are asking for.
Yeah.
And you've also got the kind of adult versions of them, which again, you know, they're healthy, they're good, there's good options. But again, calories to weight, to size, to cost,
mm-hmm,
for us, then still not quite right. So we are working on, you know, savory versions of fuel that is much more energy dense.
Yeah.
but it's still really easy on the stomach, and again adds that feeling. But it's not a straightforward process.
Having the powders and the liquids, it kind of all dawns. It all comes from convenience, and you can know you've got at least a rough idea of what you're taking on and things.
Absolutely,
and that's what you miss when you do start, say, having the argument of, "Well, I'll just take 15 bananas and something like that."
And that's so to me, it's about if you're going to be running for however
because
long,
ultra running and trail runners and all these sports, ultra endurance athletes, that's still a very new sport. This all came up
14, 50 hours. You know, and to me, so that, and again, that's why, like I mentioned before, about trying to find, it's about finding the right stuff that is kind of has the right amount of calories, that is easy to eat, that's easy on the stomach, that's actually not going to weigh your pack down. Because the more stuff you carry, the harder it is, using more energy. You know, why carry a picnic?
We all know someone that can do these races on what seems like just water and no energy. Yeah. And a lot of the time, that's the argument that gets thrown at me. Because if I'm talking to someone who's a decent level runner and they're going to be out for a long time, then I push them to the higher end of the kind of carb intake per hour. And that's what they should be working towards.
Yeah.
But then I don't know how many times they'll say, well, so-and-so doesn't have that. Or
do you know what? This is an interesting one because, for example, and I'm sure Ricky won't mind me mentioning this, but Ricky Lightfoot with Lakes in a Day. So he recently broke the record for Lakes in a Day. Smashed it, to be honest with you. And Ricky's been using, you know, mountain fuel for a couple of years, but in different levels, do you know what I mean? And, you know, is it traditional fell runner background? So, you know, he'd admit himself probably, well, no, he did. He's always kind of underfueled. And it wasn't until the build-up to Lakes in the Day and then Lakes in the Day itself that the penny kind of dropped in actually fueling properly.
It's probably the first time he's had to run more than 2 hours.
and I think this is it, though. You've got elite-level runners who, again, get caught up in that kind of, well, I don't know, that kind of thing that people say, oh, well, you don't need this and you don't need that. It's a really simple thing. Look, there's nothing amazing about our bodies.
The biggest
biological makeup of our bodies is that we need certain things to function effectively. And if you feed your body those things, it'll function effectively better.
Mm.
And I think that what's interesting is that when you see some athletes take it more seriously and arguably they get more consistent results than some of the athletes who maybe don't, but then you also do look at some of the athletes who maybe don't, and you think, God, just think if you actually did, what you could do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's, because the biggest argument I just always think of is like that people will talk about outliers, and like they are outliers, whether they're famous outliers or not, but that it's just someone's kind of, it's someone's story at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And then you get people, like I've read up loads on Kouros, and he wasn't an ultra runner by my thing. He was just an eating machine kind of thing. If you're going to look at any outlier, it's like he's the biggest outlier. Like no one's got close to his 24 and things like this.
Yeah.
And his level of eating
was
ridiculous carb-wise. And it was dates and things like that.
Yeah, but
and I know the intensity is lower at that kind of end of the running.
Yeah,
but even then, nothing's changed. Like we haven't evolved since he was knocking out these results. It just always makes me think. Expect, like you said, some of the people I know that they're amazing runners, but they're just for whatever reason neglect that side of things.
I think as well, there's a confusion between fat adaptation, keto diets and all this kind of thing. And I think that kind of feeds this kind of thing about you don't need carbs. I don't do carbs. No, I'm fat adapted. I don't do carbs. I only have this, that and the other. When we were born, we were fat adapted. from the moment, in fact, even before we were born, we were burning fat. We were, you know, train sensibly. A lot of your training will be naturally done at a lower intensity. You get naturally fitter. Your body naturally uses a different fuel source. Because you're fitter, you're able to run a 7-minute mile. Like 6 months ago, I could only run, the fastest I could run is an 8-minute mile. Now I can run a 6-minute mile. I'm actually using the same level of energy.
Yeah.
But it's just because my body, I'm just fitter.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's that side of it. But if I actually want to sustain that at real pace and I want to push through and maybe run a bit quicker, then I actually do need to have some carbohydrate as well to take me on, because that thing of you've got an hour's worth of energy in your system, right? Okay. But actually, if you actually want to stay running strong for that full hour, and it takes time for your body to actually create all this energy, because it's a complex process, even the fat adaptation process takes bloody energy to do that. Taking on some faster acting carbohydrate through a jelly or whatever early on in that process, 10 minutes in, for example, will mean you actually finish super strong.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you want to finish super strong? Why would you want to be on that downward kind of fatigue point at the end of your race? Surely you want to be either sustaining that pace or even trying to pick it up. But you're only going to do that if you actually help your body along by taking on some form of energy.
Yeah.
Got there at the end.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right, let's go to James's question, because that links into this. James Escott, he's actually a high-level kayaker that I'm helping with his running out of season. He wants to know, how often do you full race prep for a training session? So I think what he means is, how often should he be looking at practicing his nutrition, basically, or his energy for race day?
Well, it depends what he means by practice, because obviously, and it depends on what kind of racing he's doing.
Mm.
Because if it's like an ultra, then you kind of probably, it's not, see, to me, it's not necessarily a thing of practicing with the food you're going to eat, because I think the system that we have is all very palatable and works, and it kind of does its job. It's more a case of making sure that you get into good habits.
Okay.
So making sure that when you're running, and it doesn't matter if you're going out for a short run or whatever, practicing like 15 minutes in, start sipping a drink. You know, if you're going to regularly, if you say you're going to do an ultra, and you know, for example, right, well, I'm fat in, I'm going to maybe have a jelly every hour or 2 hours or whatever. Well, in your run, maybe you might take a jelly, and it might be a 2-hour run, but you don't necessarily need to have the whole, you know, you might say, right, well, so I'm going to practice the principle of making sure I remember taking it. So it might be that you just literally carry that jelly, stick in your top pocket, whatever, and you might have it in quarters, but it's just practicing the process of, right, okay, if I'm going to do it, which pocket am I going to keep my jellies in? You know, getting used to the fact, opening them up, putting them away, tying them up, and then my bars, I'm going to be using bars as well. So actually, is it going to be better to have a whole bar, or is it going to be a case of, I'm going to chop my bar up and I'm going to put in little plastic, you know, in little Ziploc bags?
Yeah.
Those are the things I think you practice, and you might get to a point where you think, well, I want to make sure that I can take that calorific load, for example, for a number of hours. Yeah, for a few of your runs, you might go out and just take on that full, you know, take on everything that you plan to have in an hour or so. But like, you know yourself, that doesn't actually, doing it in training is not, nothing matches doing, actually being in the race.
Yeah.
Because in training, you won't actually do, if you've got an overnighter.
Yeah. If you've got training, a 10-hour race, you're not doing a 10-hour, well, hopefully they're not doing a 10-hour training run to practice.
No. And a lot of people's issues can kind of come about later on. So whether that's approaching the evening time or overnight or in the early hours of the morning and things like that, because that's when your body's not used to eating or drinking things. It's meant to be asleep.
Yeah.
And you keep shoving flipping food down it.
One of the biggest, not problems, but one of the question I get a lot is, when should I start taking things on? And it's, and again, I just think, like, really simply, if you, the longer the race, the more you have to kind of look after yourself in the first half.
Definitely.
Because we've, anyone that's done it before will know, as soon as you get past a certain point,
yeah,
it becomes really a different tough kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And I know some people will say, well, I'll try and eat cheese and ham and pork pies until, and then leave the gels until, as an emergency kind of thing. And but for me, I always just tell people that it's almost crazy. You need to, the reason that the jellies and the drinks and things like that are there is because it's convenient, like going back to the convenience, it should go down well once you've practiced it.
Yeah.
You do that from the start kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And then the emergency is almost the cheese and the whatever.
Yeah, because the thing is, you remember, like, depending on the consistency, the fiber content, all these different factors of foods, they take time to go through your system.
Mm.
So meat, you could take ages through your system, so you can end up backing your system up. So you might think, oh, I'm going to have the solid, we'll call it solid food, I'm going to have the solid food first and the kind of liquid food next. But the problem with that is the solid food actually is going into your stomach. Your stomach is a muscle, right? You're walking, running, jogging, whatever it may be. You're pulling blood flow away from it. You're stressing it because it's connected to your leg. Everything's connected, so it's getting jiggled around, and it's trying desperately to kind of fold all this food over to break it down with all these stomach juices and things, and then you shove something else down, and you shove something else down, and it's all this solid stuff, and it's all this hard to break down stuff, and proteins and things like that, your cheeses, your meats and stuff, they're taking longer. You know, so by the time you
for
think...
For me, those kind of things are more like just to satiate yourself. And you're talking longer races.
I think for me, it's like you can have absolutely a bit of everything in a long race, but it's about having literally a bit. So, look, there's nothing...
But the longer you can nail it from the start...
Yeah, little
the
enough...
The better position you're
absolutely. On. Absolutely. So you basically, for me, it's about getting that balance of your liquid... whether it be a little bit of a jelly, whether it be a little bit of a solid, whether it be, but it's little enough, and it doesn't take much of it to add up. Your body can only absorb 250-ish calories an hour anyway. So it doesn't take long for that to add up, but you don't even need to necessarily have that many calories an hour. Some 1 hour...
Do you have any plans to introduce some more flavours?
Yes.
Particularly the more savoury ones like ginger tech.
Yes. No, we are. We're always looking.
Got ginger, date.
So we've got double curry. Ginger, got date, and we've got curry. It's a turmeric and orange. But we still can't, because, again, we don't do ourselves any favours. The jellies are a nightmare to produce. The bars are a bloody complex beast to produce. So we don't. So because of that, and because of the ingredients, they're expensive to produce and they're complex to produce.
Yeah.
So which is why at the moment they're in your traditional kind of cling film type wrapper, which again needs to change because it's not brilliant for whether you're on a bike or even certain conditions, coughing and stuff like that. So the shapes of the bars we need to slightly adapt. The wrapper we need to adapt. But to get to that process, there's a number of things we need to kind of go through first. And once we've done that, absolutely, we have got other ideas for kind of bars. And, you know, we have worked on like kind of protein type bar. I have a bit of an issue with kind of protein bars in the sense of they're not really something you should be having. To replace like the best kind of recovery type fuel is your recovery, your proper balance, recovery shake with your carbohydrate, your protein, your minerals, your vitamins, all those things in one. It doesn't come in a bar.
Not fish and chips.
Fish and chips is quite good.
Yeah.
but we are looking, we have been exploring the protein bar, but
but I can't think of anything.
So there is an argument for having a protein element within the system that people doing multi-day or longer or expedition type events would benefit from it.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about your so-called carb killer, muscle building protein, like, you know, with the same old crappy ingredients that just make,
Is there anything else you've got in the pipeline that you can let us know? Working to develop the current ones?
Yeah, no, we have got some exciting stuff in the pipeline. I can't really say what it is, but no, we have got some. Well, I think, and again, variations of what we've got to make them better, or we add to the system. And I think at the moment, our system could do with a convenient, easy to consume, easy on the stomach, savoury option.
Mm.
And that's what we're working on.
Yeah. So jumping around a bit, I want to know a little bit more about like the fell running scene and things like that. And particularly kind of like, I'm guessing you still attend lots of the races and things and stuff with Mountain Fuel, but I get asked a lot from my members at Runstrong specifically about if they should maybe try a fell race and things like this. Oh, where I am in North Wales, it's got a lot better. It's more accessible. You could just, any of them could turn up, but up here, experiencing them is completely different, I think, even still. More because you can, once it starts, there's two or three races a week sometimes.
Yeah. And it's midweek, Saturday, Sunday, yeah.
So give us a bit more about the fell running.
I think anybody, you know, there's fell races to suit everybody. There's lots of different types of fell race. Some are obviously a lot more technical than others. Some require a lot of navigation. But the majority of fell races, the reality is that for the bulk of us, we're in the pack.
Mm.
So there's always people around you. So you shouldn't feel intimidated about thinking, oh God, I can't go and do a fell race because I've not really been up in the hills very much. I've not been in the fells very much. Typically, there's going to be people around you.
Yeah.
Do you mean, so you don't need to worry about getting lost, because if you get lost, well, the guy beside you lost as well. And hopefully he's going to read the map.
Yeah.
So I think that I would say, look, there's nothing to be intimidated about going to do a fell race. The beauty of fell races is lots of people walk.
Yeah.
So again, there's no shame in walking, because at the end of the day, when you're going up a hill, they're often quite steep. So you get the opportunity to walk as well. So it's kind of, there's nothing, I think people maybe look at it and feel intimidated because it's hills and it's kind of rough terrain. But the terrain, it can be a little bit technical in some races, can be a little bit rough in some races. But it's bloody good fun.
Yeah.
And all the people that go to fell races, it's like everything, I suppose. You're going to get a real mix of kind of characters. But the vast majority of people who go to fell races will all be very supportive and welcoming to absolutely anybody, whatever their ability.
And you can do it pretty minimal kit, can't you, depending on the race?
Yeah, they will have... the majority, you will always probably have a required kit list.
Mm.
So it could be that you do need your tape seam jackets and your tape seam buttons and your compass, your whistle, bit of food. But it's not like some of the ultras where you literally got your 80-litre rucksack and your massive survival bag. And, you know, there is a requirement, because you are going into the mountains, the weather could change, all those kind of things, but it'll fit into a bum bag.
Yeah. Starter entry, fell races, local.
Well, I'm obviously based in Keswick.
We're in Keswick now.
So I'd be biased. So but I suppose, Keswick, you've got, for example, you've got a whole mix. So you've got races that are on, say, for example, Lattrig, where you've kind of got a really good mix of trail and very easy fell. Then you've got things like the Caldale Horseshoe, which is going, it's just a spectacular route because you've got Grisdale, you've got running all the way around, you're kind of looking back on yourself, looking back down the valley, and you're seeing kind of Skidder and all that kind of stuff. And so I suppose when I used to do skiing, people used to say to me, what's your favourite ski resort? And I'd just say, well, any with snow.
Yeah.
So again, a race is just, I don't think I could ever say there's just one I'd recommend or the favourite.
They can just jump in, basically. Yeah.
Just go anywhere, any place. It's just running outside.
Yeah.
Uphills.
But you've been waiting for the 14 months off.
Yeah, no, do you know what? I chatted to Phil earlier because I'm now at that 50 category. Yeah. And actually, because a few of the speedy runners aren't coming, the actual lad who probably, I can't remember what his name is now, but he's another vet 50, like a bullet.
Yeah.
He's going to win.
Not slowing down these days, are people?
No.
We've got Andy Davis in Wales. You see his marathon time recently. Just got the vet 40 marathon, 2:14 something.
Oh, it's just insane.
Yeah. That's but then he came to running a little bit late, I think, so he's got less in his legs.
Yeah.
What else kind of in this, now we're coming up to Christmas and things, but next year, what are the plans going into next year personally?
Oh, personally, for me,
yeah,
I think for me, I just want to be able to. See, it's a funny one, isn't it? Right. If I'm talking in front of my wife, family and stuff like that.
They won't be listening to my podcast.
It's just about enjoying running and maybe, you know, just be able to enjoy getting back out in the fells and easy this and the other. But the reality is, I would actually like to be able to run fast again. I want to be able to run again. And in my mind, I've now had these big lumps taken out of my hips that were smashing into my hip sockets every time I ran that were kind of stopping my muscles from working properly. I don't have those now. So I should be like, you know, remember Roadrunner?
Yeah.
I should not be Roadrunner. I should be like absolutely full lion. So
did you become obsessive with the injury or anything? You know, like trying to research it or
when I knew the operation I was gonna have, looked into it, I did all the research on rehab, did that and the other. I tried to actually get as fit as I could before the operation.
Yeah.
I literally did a fell run the day before I went in for the operation. I was thinking in my mind, I was thinking, right, it's got to be.
In case it was your last one.
Yeah. I'd never run again. I just thought, I need to be as fit as hell because I'm not your average person. I'm going to recover so quickly. I'm going to be diligent on my rehab. I've got all my sheets. I know it all. I've looked at the videos. And I didn't really appreciate what he did because I remember kind of waking up, coming out, and the surgeon couldn't see me. He said, look, Rupert, I don't want you to actually do your rehab for the first 2 weeks. And, you know, I kind of had to do quite a bit. I was pushing the boundaries of what I could do, blah, blah, blah. And he kind of went. And I was thinking, nah, because I feel, it was pretty sore, but I thought, no, come on, he's done it. He said he's done a good job. Literally within days, I was on the spin bike trying to spin. I was trying to follow the protocols as if it was just removing the bone spurs and not the fact that literally there's no labrum left and he was pegging it, you know. And I kind of went over the top. I thought I was doing it really easy, but you know, within 2 weeks, I was like up to an hour on the spin bike and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And I basically gave myself tendinopathy in there, I think by trying too hard, by trying to be too good, I actually wasn't good. So the second time round, I've actually barely done any of the official exercises. All I did was, because I actually had to get into work, like literally within 2 days, in fact, the following day from the operation, I was in work with deliveries, lugging boxes around this and the other. So I thought, do you know what, I'm having to function and do exercises that are kind of like you work in those areas, even though I shouldn't have been. I shouldn't be off my feet for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm not going to do any proper exercises. I'm actually just going to work and I should just let my body heal. And while at times it's been frustrating, I actually think by doing that, I'm in a better position now. So now I'm starting to do a little bit of running and I'm doing a little bit of kind of the more official kind of exercises for kind of strengthening things. But yeah.
Strength work wise, have you been in a gym or do you do it at home? Or?
No, I do a lot of kind of like self body work. So here's this table, you can see it's a raised table. So I'll do like reverse pull-ups on this. I've got a pull-up bar. I'll do press-ups. So I'll do a lot of
pull-ups natural, and press-ups. Your legs are fucked.
I'll do a lot of natural weight stuff. And then I'll do like functional core things.
Yeah.
And I will do the odd bit of kind of like, you know, kind of squats and stuff like that. But I've tried to be relatively sensible. But I've torn my bloody track because my son's in the pull-ups.
Yeah.
Because he's... I was trying to compete with him. So I've torn the bloody, where my insertion of a bicep is in there.
Oh, no.
About 8 weeks ago, and it's bloody agony. So the, so anyway, so I'm trying to be sensible.
And when did you know it was okay to try a run?
Well, I didn't really. Mm. I just, at different times, I used to go out in the garden.
Had you been out hiking? Kind of thing.
Again, with the walking, I was finding when I was walking, it was getting really deep, kind of almost like arthritic kind of pains all around my kind of hip joint and stuff. So I kind of, again, I was having to limit the walking I do because I walk around town and stuff anyway, but I was like maybe walking 1 mile, 2 miles tops. But then really, it was all, like I said, it was about kind of 4 or 5 weeks ago, I just suddenly decided I'm actually going to try and do a further run. So literally 1 mile, and then a couple of miles, 3 miles, 4 miles. So Sunday's run will be the furthest I'll have run in a long time.
Mm. Fingers crossed it'll go all right then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And have you got anyone else? It's Tour de Helvellyn tomorrow. Anyone else running that you know?
There will be.
Yeah.
But I can't.
You don't know.
No.
We've got, I did find it earlier. Someone was asking, how did it come about that Killian was using Mountain Fuel on the Bob Graham? It was the Bob Graham, wasn't it?
It was big. No, I met Killian.
He'd used that a long time before, hadn't he?
No. It's a bit of a story, this. So basically, Killian obviously came over to do the Bob Graham. In the kind of build of it, being a local lad, and we've got our...
Of the Mountain Fuel business and things. So personally, kind of, it's grown in products, hasn't it? And it's grown in the amount of people using it. What's it like outside of... Because it's easy to be in the kind of trail, ultra... running bubble kind of thing, but I know you do the triathlon and all that kind of thing, and is it used abroad in a big way or
like no? We don't. Again, I think because of that distribution, I think we've deliberately kind of kept it kind of UK based. Yes, we have. Obviously, we do have people who are outside the UK that buy our product. Killian and Paul, you know, people will buy the product, but we don't. Other than Poland, we have a kind of Mountain Fuel Polska, but we don't at the moment have any other distribution abroad. That's something that we might look into for things like the jellies and the bars, because they're just like, it would just seem a shame not to, just too good a product not to kind of share in a sense.
Mm. And like you say, it's difficult to push a product or products out there unless you are doing it the other way kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to trust the people. Like, the only reason why I've got Mountain Fuel Polska is because Jacob and Sabby, they've been using Mountain Fuel for years. Like, I trust Jacob, like, you know, with literally anything. Mm. So the fact that when they came and approached, said, look, can we do this? We were like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, again, going back, no contracts. Yeah, there's no thingy. It's just look each other in the eye.
Yeah.
And you'll do that, I'll do this. Yeah.
Because you probably know how hard you've got to work to make it work anyway.
Yeah, it's everything in life. Nothing comes easy. Everything's about hard work.
I think a lot of people, it's easy just to see the mountain feel. And this is the other thing I was going to mention. Like, I really want to get people to, whether it's you at Mountain Fuel or other companies, because I'd ask other companies as well, as go and speak to you.
Absolutely.
When you see them, when you're there all day at a Fell race or an ultra race or something, you are genuinely there just to talk about the product. You don't have to walk away with 50 quid's worth of stuff or anything like that.
Absolutely.
Because I've been there. But if you ask the people that you're buying from, I think that will usually answer a lot of your questions as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes. If people are wondering, because people like me, it's one of the biggest questions you get asked about it. And I think it's quite simple, really. But at the same time, if you have a conversation with the person.
Tomorrow, fundamentally different.
Yeah.
You know, so they're different approaches. And these are the things that we can, you know, help and advise folk on.
Because I think, in the past, I've even, like you were saying, I've been approached by random companies. Some you've heard of, some people would never have heard of.
Mm.
And it is kind of, do you want some of these? And then you challenge them, not trying to catch people out, but I've asked what they are. And half the time, the person that's got in contact with you can't tell you the basics of what they are.
And this is it.
And it's and then it's kind of, you end up in a bit of an endless conversation. Well, hang on a minute, mate.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult. What is it? kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because half of me is trying to catch them out.
Yeah.
Because I know if I'm getting that message, so is X amount of other people.
Yeah.
It's fine if you want to take stuff on, but I know for a fact as well, because I coach enough people.
Yeah.
That they message these kind of people that kind of thing, and they just get kind of bullshit back.
Yeah.
And they're none the wiser.
Yeah. I when I see kind of messages and I see information out there that is just really, that's the most frustrating thing for me, when you see kind of comments and things on Facebook or whatever, because you kind of want to be able to help.
Yeah.
But obviously you're just another, you know, to everybody else on there, you're just another meaningless kind of voice.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of want to say, yeah, but guys, look, honestly, I've got a fair bit of experience here. I don't want to, you know, I'm not up myself or anything. I honestly have such a passion for wanting people to get the best out of those experiences, but you can't necessarily get across on the keyboard.
Yeah,
on
it's
Facebook
difficult.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
I would say stop asking questions on Facebook groups and start actually asking the companies that are doing these products, absolutely, whoever it may be, not just us.
Yeah.
Ask other people, because they should know, they should be able to give you balanced answers, they should be able to give you proper directive and ideas, and it shouldn't just be, oh yeah, you just need our product, that's all you need, kind of thing. It should, you know, there should be some balanced reality within it. And I hope that's what we do. I think we're just very down to earth and realistic, passionate. Do believe, obviously, our products are the best. But we wouldn't produce them if we didn't think they were the best at what they do. But that's not to say you can't use somebody else's as well. Obviously, don't do that. Just buy ours. So, but do you know what I mean? It's just,
people want to ask any other questions, or we've missed anything that you want to talk about,
yeah,
and I'll catch up with Rupert again, maybe after
after Glory is 10K. It'll be my turn next.
Oh yeah, Rupert's turn next.
I need to do a bit of a walk talk video with you next, next time you're up. We'll have a wander around the fells and find out about your
brilliant. I'm a bit camera shy though, so you'll have to give me some fair warning. Cheers again, Rupert.
Thanks again to Rupert for sharing some of his time just before Christmas. Hope you enjoyed the interview. We've got more chats coming up early in the year, so the podcast should be a bit more consistent this time around. But next episode is episode 10, and it's just going to be a bit of a review of my running year and maybe some plans for 2020. So that one will be out next week. I appreciate all the reviews that you've all been leaving recently, and of course all the subscribes. Please keep doing so, it'll encourage me to do some more. But for now, you can find Rupert's details again in the show notes, and I will speak to you all soon.